For some Americans, this recent election was a momentous occasion. For others, a monumental disappointment. And for many others, a surreal experience. The presidential election of 2016, regardless of your views about the outcome, will go down in history, probably like no other election before. Today, political observers and analysts Dr. Paul Beck, Joe Hallett, and Yvonne Lasisco help us make some sense of what took place and how it might impact the future of politics on Town Hall, Ohio.
This is Town Hall, Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall, Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall, Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Joy, sadness, relief. Whatever your feelings about the 2016 election, there are probably some residuals that we're going to be dealing with for a long time to come. To help us analyze what took place and what's coming next in the world of politics, we have with us in the studio political science professor emeritus Paul Beck from The Ohio State University, Mr. Joe Hallett, retired senior editor from the Columbus Dispatch, and Ms. Yvonne Lasisco, vice president of public policy for the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. Welcome back to all of you. I am tempted to begin the show with the highly intellectual question, what the heck just happened? Paul, maybe start us off. Just your general thoughts on, was I right? Was this an election unlike most we've ever seen?
Well, obviously a surprising, even stunning result. I think nobody, including people in the Trump campaign, predicted what was going to happen yesterday and into the night last night. Certainly Ohio, it was not well predicted. The Dispatch poll, for the first time in my memory, didn't nail it completely. No poll really nailed it well, except maybe the Los Angeles Times poll. So it was an unprecedented result in terms of the surprise, maybe back to Dewey Truman all the way back in 1948. And then it was an unprecedented campaign in terms of the negativity of the campaign. It was a real, maybe the way to put it is it was a real downer of a campaign. And all of us are kind of reeling from that and probably delighted that it's over with.
Joe, your thoughts?
Well, it was a bad night for pundits and prognosticators, for sure. The pundits were more than wrong. They were laughingly oblivious to the outcome. I mean, eminent prognosticators like Nate Silver and Larry Sabato, they foretold a 70% chance of a Clinton victory. And she did win the popular vote, it appears, but she soundly lost the election. Trump got 279 electoral votes, and she got 218, and Trump flipped Ohio, Iowa, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Michigan, all of which went for President Obama, in 2012. So it was an outcome that I don't think many saw coming.
I should note for our listeners, we recorded this past Wednesday, and the way things are going in the political world, things could have changed immensely between our recording time and Wednesday and when you're hearing it this weekend. Yvonne, when I walked in the office and you walked in the office, not as Farm Bureau employees but as American citizens, I think my coworkers reflected what we just heard from Paul and Joe. It was like almost shock.
I think it was. I think, the text chain that every person in America was on last night with their friends, with their coworkers, whoever it was, they went hot and heavy into the night. At some point, everyone stopped. And then we started them again this morning. And everyone said, what exactly happened? And I think it was kind of just a general sense of, I'm not quite sure. I don't think anyone quite knows. I know rural Ohio had a lot to do with it. That's for sure. But outside of that, how so many people were wrong for so long about so many things? Not entirely clear.
Oh, we're going to back up and hit several of those questions. But, Joe, I'll start with you here. We now know who the president-elect is, but let's go back months. We ended up with two candidates representing the Republican and Democratic parties that had the highest negative perception ratings probably in the history of presidential races. You heard everybody say, any Republican other than Trump could beat Clinton. And you heard the other side say, well, any Democrat other than Clinton could beat Trump. And how did we end up with these two candidates that I won't say universally, but seem to be not the most popular choices to begin with?
Well, I think Clinton was the establishment candidate from the get-go, and faced a unforeseen and surprisingly strong primary campaign by Bernie Sanders, who appealed to the base, to the Elizabeth Warren wing of the Democratic Party, and got a lot of traction. But I think that the establishment of the Democratic Party, which who knows if it even exists anymore, was surprised by the strong Bernie showing, but still was determined that Hillary Clinton would prevail, always seen as the strongest general election candidate. And on the Republican side, Donald Trump, I think, happened because, one, there was a huge field in the Republican primary. There was not a single or maybe two eminent challengers to him. He received an enormous amount of free publicity, millions of dollars from the cable networks, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, who couldn't take their focus off the shiny object, and Trump was the shiny object. And every time they put the camera on him, they got ratings. So I think for people like Governor John Kasich, who were trying to get traction, they couldn't break through that. And so we ended up with a candidate who, frankly, had a very plain message, even though there was not much meat on the bone, to Americans about making America great again and restoring our past glory.
Let me add a little historical perspective to this. The Gallup poll since the late 1970s has asked a question, are you satisfied with the way things are going right now in the country? Others ask this right track, wrong track question, but it has basically the same results. And what we find in 2016, or on the eve of 2016, even before this year began, was a overwhelming majority of Americans who were dissatisfied. 17% say they were satisfied, the rest weren't. And so the ground was there for people to kind of rebel against the status quo. And they did, as Joe pointed out, on both sides. A lot of Democrats rebelled against the status quo that was embodied by Hillary Clinton. A lot of Republicans rebelled against the status quo that was embodied by this group of establishment Republicans, all of whom Trump attacked, or almost all of whom he attacked, and all of whom he vanquished. And then when you roll into the general election campaign, you have a candidate who represented change from the status quo, and a candidate who really was the status quo in many ways, wanted to carry on the Obama presidency. And I think we see the result of that, the anti-establishment candidate won. He won despite some real flaws as a candidate, just as Hillary Clinton had real flaws as a candidate. But he was able to survive. He was able to win a smashing victory, at least in the Electoral College, though not in the popular vote.
One of the things that I read right off the bat was that the Republican Party is now completely fractured. That you have the traditional conservative versus the Tea Party split in the party. I would suggest that perhaps the same question could be asked of the Democratic Party, the socialists versus the traditional liberal, moderately liberal. Paul, your thoughts, have we not just elected someone that we didn't think could be elected, but have we changed what's the political parties are going to look like in America?
I think it remains to be seen. Let me take the Democrats first. I think that there are obviously fissures within the Democratic Party. The most important one being they don't really have a candidate going forward for 2020. There's really nobody on the horizon who could kind of inherit the party and pull it together. The fissures are not great policy-wise. Bernie Sanders was just more progressive than a progressive Clinton. On the Republican side, you have a really interesting situation. A president who campaigned against the party establishment, whose policy agenda is really quite dissimilar from the policy agenda that Paul Ryan talked about yesterday and again today in the Congress. And the question will be, can they fit those two together? I think it remains to be seen. The ball is in Trump's court, basically. He is the president. It's his party.
Well, and if I might add, there was a lot of speculation about the Republican Party having to do some soul searching. But I think it's now the turn for Democrats to look in the mirror, because they may have lost their base. The traditional blue-collar voter abandoned Hillary Clinton. In Ohio, male voters supported Trump by 55-38% margin. Amazingly, Trump won union households in Ohio by 5 points, 49-44. Just 4 years ago, President Obama carried union households in Ohio by 23 points. We saw Trump win the Youngstown media market. We saw him win the Toledo media market. He lost in Cuyahoga County, in the northeastern Ohio region, which is overwhelmingly Democrat. He lost that by less than 1%. The Democrats did not come home for this election. We all heard a lot about the Republicans were going to abandon the party, but it happened the other way around.
Joe Hallett is retired senior editor with the Dispatch. Paul Beck, political science professor from Ohio State. Yvonne Lasisco, vice president of public policy of Ohio Farm Bureau. As I look back over my watching of elections, you always hear, okay, well, the Democrats and the Republicans, whites and African Americans, male and female. Yvonne, this year, the dividing line that I heard talked about more was urban versus rural. Speak to what may have happened in rural America and why that, I don't even think rural was on most pollsters' radar ahead of this.
It wasn't. I mean, they really, really underestimated that rural vote and where it was going to come from. And I don't know how the polls did that, but it was interesting you talking about the parties and the base there. I think rural voters came out and they voted not based on D or R. They voted on where they felt they were standing in the economy right now, where they felt their standing was overall. They are feeling like they're seeing their small towns not developing the way they used to. There's no economic development there. People are leaving and they're not coming back. And so they voted based on, and that's the question, is it the candidate? So, you know, in 20 years when we look back, are we going to say, yeah, this was the year that we really saw that divide within the Democratic Party or that divide within the Republican Party? Or was it solely those candidates for those two particular parties that caused people to maybe switch over? Are they going to go back to their bases after this election?
We're going to maybe explore that question and a whole lot more, not just the presidential election, but Ohio reelected a senator. We made some very minor changes in the Senate and in the House in Washington, probably even more minor changes in the State House here in Columbus. So we're going to talk more about all things election 2016 with Paul Beck, Joe Hallett, and Yvonne Lasisco when we continue on Town Hall Ohio. We are back analyzing all things election 2016 with Joe Hallett, who's retired as senior editor of the Dispatch, Dr. Paul Beck, political science professor emeritus from Ohio State, Yvonne Lasisco, our vice president of public policy at Ohio Farm Bureau. Yvonne, we had to go to break. I want to continue the conversation that we were having. And in a nutshell, you said when I asked about the importance of the rural vote, it wasn't R and D so much as what?
You know, that interesting discussion of where were people voting from? Were they voting based on their traditional party? Were they voting based on the individual candidate? And those people who did switch over from their traditional party, are they going to go back to it? What happens with that base? Is it a true fissure in the base, or is it about this candidate?
I want to address this urban-rural divide, and it's been with us for some time, actually, particularly in Ohio, but other places as well. I looked quickly at some of the statistics today in terms of turnout and vote in some of our most rural and small-town counties, and the turnout levels weren't really any higher, at least in the ones that I looked at, than they had been 4 years ago. But the Republican vote was considerably higher. And if you think of the comparison between Romney in 2012 and Trump today, Romney did not really speak to poor, small-town people, working-class people in a way that Trump has been able to. And that really was his skill and his advantage in this campaign. Whether it can last over time, you know, who knows? I come from a little town like some of the ones in Ohio, and it's a town that's dying. People who don't have good jobs, who are really troubled. There are opiate problems, of course, here in Ohio and many of these communities. Not that they aren't elsewhere, but I think they're really felt in those communities. And this was sort of a cry out for people who live in those kinds of situations, saying, hey, pay attention to me and pay attention to my problems. And Donald Trump was able to do that.
And to Paul's point, we're now in our 13th consecutive year in which a majority of voters say that the country is headed on the wrong track. So there's great pessimism out there. And if you go to rural areas, I grew up in Fulton County, and in my little town, there used to be lots of little factories, most of them auto-related, all over the place. They're all closed now. Those jobs are gone, and they aren't coming back, in my opinion, despite what Donald Trump says. But people were looking for some hope, and I truly, personally underestimated the passion behind the Trump candidacy. I still do a little work for the Dispatch. They asked me to go up to Northwest Ohio and talk to voters. I went to Fulton County, and the passion behind Trump shocked me. Sandy Barber, the county chairwoman up there for many years, told me that she had 1,500 Trump yard signs for the Fulton County Fair. They were gone in 3 days. She ordered 500 more. They were gone in a day. The other thing I learned up there, and I think it's true all over Ohio, is a lot of Republicans, Donald Trump Republicans, are very angry at John Kasich, Governor John Kasich, right now for not endorsing Trump.
Let's just one thing, and since Secretary Clinton came out on the short end of this vote, let's talk about some of the things that transpired fairly late in the campaign season. Paul, Joe, Yvonne, how much difference did it make when the email scandal got elevated, when the Clinton Foundation questions were raised, her tying herself so closely to Obama and Obamacare in particular? These kind of things, did people vote against Hillary as much as they did for Mr. Trump in some cases?
I think there certainly were a lot of people who did vote against Hillary, and each of those things, I believe, hurt her, maybe except for the Obama link. She really needed that to be able to mobilize African-Americans in particular in the old Obama constituency. She didn't quite do as well as Obama had in mobilizing that constituency, but she definitely needed it. The email controversy, I think, really hurt her deeply. And in fact, even though Comey came out with a second letter right on the eve of the election, what it did was it drew people's attention again to that issue. However, it was resolved. And so they were thinking again. My guess is we will find that there was a definite break in the direction of Trump in the last day or two of the campaign, like there was for Reagan back in 1980. There would be a parallel there. And that might be why the polls were so off base, because they had really stopped their polling with the weekend before. They really weren't picking up what was happening to these late deciding voters.
We could go on talking about what went well or what went poorly for both of the candidates, but we've only got about a minute here before we need to take a break. Didn't seem like, appropriately, we haven't even really talked about any of the issues because much of this campaign wasn't issue-oriented. Yvonne, just in general, we now have President Donald Trump coming in January. How do you think farmers are going to approach that? What are going to be some of the big things that we're going to be talking to that administration about?
You know, immigration reform was such a prominent part of the Trump campaign, and so it has to be addressed by us. And we may not necessarily be on the same page, but we're going to keep beating that drum about the fact that we need that labor force. And so hopefully we can figure out a way to get to getting that labor force without having to be at odds with his overall immigration policy.
And trade was another area. Both candidates said, well, we're not going to trade with anybody anymore, and farmers don't think that's such a great idea.
We need trade.
Well, we're going to return to our conversation with Yvonne Lasisco of Ohio Farm Bureau, Dr. Paul Beck from The Ohio State University, and Joe Hallett, retired from the Columbus Dispatch. There were some other elections, including a Senate race here in Ohio. We'll talk about that and more when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
The choice we make today is gonna stay.
Back on Town Hall, Ohio, with political analyst Yvonne Lasisco of the Ohio Farm Bureau, Joe Hallett, retired from the Columbus Dispatch, and Paul Beck, political scientist at The Ohio State University. Joe, the Portman-Strickland race, when it first started, it seemed it drew a lot of national attention. They thought it might be one of the swing races that might give the Democrats control of the Senate. Get down to the early week of November, not so much.
Well, there's an old adage that elections are won and lost on filing day. And I think that when Governor Strickland filed and the Democratic Party endorsed him, they lost that election. Not because he was not a popular candidate. I think he had a decent record as governor. But the Republicans already had the playbook on him. He had the misfortune of being governor during the worst recession since the Great Depression, when we had, 400,000 or more jobs lost. And the Republicans, Rob Portman especially, backed by gobs and gobs of outside money. Strickland said there were upwards of $60 million worth of TV spots against him, just embedded what Kasich had already started in 2010, that Governor Strickland was responsible for the loss of Ohio's jobs. And it worked.
Paul, the idea now that we have a single party in control in D.C., Rob Portman held onto his Senate seat. That was repeated across the country in most cases. So the Republicans now kept control of the Senate. They maintained control of the House, and now we have an R in the White House.
Yes.
So does that mean that the Republican agenda is just going to be crammed down our throat and it's smooth sailing for any legislative or administrative agenda item that either the president or our elected representatives have?
Well, 2 points. One is that there is no the Republican agenda. Trump and the Republicans in the Congress, and there are even some divisions among them, but basically there's a contrast between the kinds of things that Trump has talked about in the campaign as his agenda, anti-trade, foreign policy agenda that's very different from the Republicans' traditional agenda. Even on entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare, they would love to reduce those entitlements in the Congress, the Republican Congress. Trump has said that he would not cut those. Now, it remains to be seen how the two of them will wed their different agendas. The other point to make is that for the first time in years, the Republicans now are in charge, which means they are accountable as a party for the kinds of policy decisions they make. They've lived in a world where they could criticize, but were not necessarily held accountable for anything. Now they are. If we come back to the Affordable Care Act, for example, Americans need some reform of health care, need some reform of Obamacare, need some reform of the old situation before Obamacare. It'll be really interesting to see how they work this out, because there's some things people stand to lose if Obamacare is just obliterated. And in fact, what we're finding, I think all of us, except those of us on Medicare, I guess, is that the costs even of private employer medical insurance is being more and more and more and more by the recipient of that insurance. And that's a problem for people in a world where medical care is increasingly costly.
Yvonne, over the years, the last 3 or 4 years, as a matter of fact, as we take our county presidents into Washington every March, we've had the privilege of Paul Ryan coming in and spending a half hour, 30, 40 minutes. He went to school at Miami of Ohio. He knows the Buckeye State, the business, the agriculture, very similar. Wouldn't it be worth the cost of admission to see that first meeting when Paul Ryan and Donald Trump sit down together and have a chat?
And I think it would. I think Paul Ryan, though, I mean, to some degree, to the same issues that Speaker Boehner was dealing with. I mean, within his own party, within the House, he was dealing with a lot of bomb throwers. He was dealing with people who had their own specific agenda. So it goes back to the same thing that we were discussing. What is that Republican agenda? And so it will be interesting to see how three different, between Senate, House, and the presidency, three different Republican agendas are all going to come together. And he has already been dealing with trying to figure out how to negotiate, how to have people who have the same party title, but potentially a little different perspective on how to get there, to bring all those different angles together.
Just quickly, I referenced his visit with our farmers. His message resonated with them. I mean, I got the impression that the Ohio farmers that have met him over the years like him.
Absolutely, they do. Because they want to see someone who's willing to try to move a good agenda forward, put egos aside, and work together.
So there might be some ambiguity about the Republican agenda, but there was none about the Trump agenda. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to have an all-Republican government. Will we see, as Trump wanted, repeal of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street reform? Will we see a wall at the Mexican border? Will we see a country that admirably has opened its arms to all religions now apply a religious test to Muslims? Is there any hope of immigration reform? Will the Iran nuclear deal be undone? Will President Trump weaken NATO? Will he stand up to Vladimir Putin? These are all questions that the Republican majority is going to have to answer.
And Yvonne's going to give us her prediction on every one when we return on Town Hall Ohio.
Out on the left, out on the right, they're always arguing wrong and right. But in the meantime, life just goes on.
We are back looking at the 2016 election with Joe Hallett, retired from the Columbus Dispatch, Paul Beck, political science professor, Ohio State, Yvonne Lasisco, Ohio Farm Bureau. I don't remember if I said it on air or off earlier, but I alluded to the idea that sometimes there's a big difference between campaigning and governing. What are the chances, Paul, or is there anything that would give us any historical indication that that the extreme Donald Trump may not be an extreme president?
Well, let me speak to the history of populism. You know, Trump is regarded, I think fairly so, as a populist. Populists who have been elected to political office have almost always been a disappointment to their followers because they become part of the establishment, and they act like the establishment. And that'll be a really interesting question for Trump. I think he's always wanted to be a part of the establishment, and now he has a great entree to that. Whether temperamentally he can fit that or not, we will see.
Joe, you made the point while we were in break there that Trump is, at least prior to the election, was I don't think anyone called him a conservative ideologue.
No, I mean, just a few short years ago, he was a Democrat. So I don't think he really has any gut feeling principle. My impression was even that he would say what was the populist thing to say. And in many instances, I think it was dangerous. I think he did a true disservice to the country by calling in question whether the election would be rigged, you know, against very, very little evidence that that ever happened. So, but you look at the Dispatch poll from last Sunday, and something like only 52% of the people who were polled said that they thought they could trust the election results.
So let's start looking a little further out. Not 4 years out, but let's turn our attention to 2 years out. We are going to be electing a new governor. We're going to be electing a Secretary of State, a treasurer, an auditor. What am I forgetting? Attorney General. So we've got all these statewide
U.S.
offices.
Senator.
U.S. Senator. Yeah. So, but on the state offices, let's do the easy. Well, maybe not the easy one, but the one that's less complicated. Who's up and coming in the Democratic Party that's going to be able to run for governor here in a couple of years?
I think the Democrats don't have much bench strength. There's talk about Rich Cordray stepping forward, and of course now he will not want to be in Washington, and he may be a possibility, but you have to really look far and wide to find somebody. Is Tim Ryan going to do that? I'm not sure that he will either. Plus, you have a whole bunch of Republicans already who have been elected statewide who are going to be competing with one another for the governor's position. So I think it looks good for the Republicans, unless things go sour in Washington, and that always is a possibility.
So we have had in the studio most recently Secretary of State John Husted, and I was hoping for a scoop, and he said, "I'll tell you this, that at the appropriate time, I know who I want Ohioans to vote for, and I'll tell you who that is." So that was the most I got out of anybody, but Husted, Lieutenant Governor, Taylor and AG Mike DeWine are the three names, and there may be more on the Republican side.
I think there were three losers other than Hillary Clinton last night on election night, and those three were Husted, DeWine, and Taylor. Because if Hillary Clinton had been elected, in 2 years hence, she would, like almost every other president, be pretty unpopular, which would be helpful to Republicans. And those three already are going to be in a 2006-like gubernatorial primary where they claw each other's eyes out. I'm not sure Taylor will be in there, but for sure DeWine and Husted will. The other winner was Secretary of State Sherrod Brown, who I think if Hillary had been elected president would have been in jeopardy to a challenge by either Josh Mandel or Representative Pat Teaberry, who's also very interested in running for the U.S. Senate. So voters will look more kindly on a Democrat, Sherrod Brown, to offset what I believe in 2 years will be a very unpopular President Trump.
We will be back to talk a little bit more about politics in Ohio. Our guest to help us sift through all of it, Yvonne Lasisco, Vice President of Public Policy with the Ohio Farm Bureau, Joe Hallett, retired senior editor with the Columbus Dispatch, Paul Beck, political science professor emeritus at The Ohio State University. We'll be back to wrap up this week's Town Hall Ohio in just a couple of moments. Back on Town Hall, Ohio, our post-mortem on election 2016 with Paul Beck from Ohio State, Joe Hallett retired from the Dispatch, Yvonne Lasisco of the Ohio Farm Bureau. One name we haven't talked a whole lot about, Joe mentioned to me earlier, John Kasich. What's next for Mr. Kasich? Paul?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I wanted to come back first to Sherrod Brown for just a minute and say that there's a populist element to Sherrod Brown that may play very well in this climate. But turning to Kasich, I think he made a very bold gamble that Donald Trump would not be left standing after this election, and that he, among others, could help to pick up the pieces for the Republican Party. I think he's lost that gamble. There's a lot of anger at him. There would have been even more, I think, had Trump lost. But there still is a lot of anger out there, a feeling that he really wasn't part of the team. And if he has ambitions for 2020, I think those ambitions, at least right now, are very, very much challenged.
How often, if you can recall, have we ever seen, you've both predicted that things aren't going to be going extremely rosy for the Trump presidency. So is there any chance that a Kasich could stand up to Trump in 4 years and try to defeat an incumbent for the Republican nomination?
See, I thought that all along, that Kasich made a calculation that whether Trump wins or loses, he's still in a good position by not endorsing him, because if he had lost, Kasich would say, I told you so. If he wins, I think many people are thinking that Trump will be very unpopular in 4 years. You even hear people speculate that he'll get impeached before then.
Yeah, but those are the people who said he could never be elected.
Yeah, exactly. So I think Kasich made the calculation, probably wrongly now, that even if Trump won, that he would be unpopular and that he would be ripe for a challenge.
So on the assumption that there's a lot of listeners that feel the way I do right now, and regardless of whether you wanted Trump or Clinton, I absolutely hated this last campaign. It was unbearable. My little grandchildren, I have to turn off the television when they were in the room when the commercials were on. It was ugly. The day after the election, I heard President Obama say, I heard Hillary Clinton say, I heard Donald Trump say, we've got to get our act together. We've got to treat each other better. We have got to become a more unified nation. Yvonne, as we look down that path, that's one of the things we try to do in Farm Bureau. We're bipartisan. We want people engaged, and we try to bring civility into it as best we can. What are our chances?
You know, I mean, as an organization that does policy advocacy, all we want to do is return our focus to policy. And so we've been dealing with the political side of this arena for so long, and in a campaign that didn't focus on issues and instead focused on a lot of negativity and a lot of anger. And so our goal is, okay, what did we hear? What were the tidbits about agricultural and rural policy that we did hear that we now can go forward and say to any of the sections of the Republican agenda, let's move forward. Let's do some really positive things in our nation now. So hopefully we've got a lot of folks all thinking of that same mind. Let's put the divisiveness behind us and let's instead look towards ways to continue to truly grow our nation.
The problem is there's structural impediments to having a more cohesive electorate. And the main one, in my opinion, is gerrymandering. We have a 50-50 state, and yet we have 16 congressional districts, 12 controlled by Republicans, 4 by Democrats. A Democrat can't win in the 12 Republican districts, and a Republican can't win in the 4. We saw our local representatives, Steve Stivers and Pat Teaberry, both Republicans, win by 33%. The local Democratic representative, Joyce Beatty, won by 36%. These are no longer elections in these congressional districts. They're coronations.
Have we got a chance, Paul, 30 seconds to do better next time around?
Well, there will be some efforts for congressional redistricting. Now, how far those are going to go, we'll see. The election result, I think, makes it less likely that that will happen, but it could happen. You know, beyond that, it seems to me that healing is in order. Whether we're going to be able to do that or not will be the question. There's a lot of anger out there in the electorate. I think they're quite capable of turning on Trump and the Republicans in 2 years if they don't feel that their situation has been improved. And it may be difficult to improve it.
Paul Beck from Ohio State, Joe Hallett, retired from the Dispatch, Yvonne Lasisco of the Ohio Farm Bureau. Thanks to all of you for joining us on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.